We exist in both the physical world and the metaphysical world. Even though we may not be aware of our metaphysical self to any significant degree while we are incarnate, our metaphysical self is very aware of our incarnational
self. Welcome to the Ecstatic Woman Podcast. Together, along with some amazing guests, we'll explore and tap into our inner wisdom and have meaningful conversations about developing our ability to self-discover, create, and be present in the world, while also uncovering new ways to think, feel, and cultivate our sense of empowerment so we can live our lives ecstatically. Now let's welcome our host.
Another episode of the Ecstatic Woman Podcast, where we activate and inspire women in their power, in their authenticity, and in their bliss. I'm your host, Alara Sage. My beloved ecstatics, you hear me speak about parallel lives, past lives, incarnation quite often, but we have yet to have a really deep dive conversation on this show. So I'm very excited for our special guest today, Dean Graves. He's going to deep dive into this with us. Dean is a renowned meditation teacher, mental health counselor, and spiritual guide with over 20 years of experience in the field. Through his expertise in mental health and deep spiritual understanding, he provides a holistic approach to healing and growth. Dean, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me. I look forward to this.
So let's first talk about, what do you understand? What is your perspective and philosophy around incarnation?
Okay. Well, in order to understand the incarnation process, it's kind of necessary to start a little before then and lay some background information. We exist in both the physical world and the metaphysical world. It's a simultaneous existence, and it's not mutually exclusive. In other words, even though we may not be aware of our metaphysical self to any significant degree while we are incarnate, our metaphysical self is very aware of our incarnational self. The metaphysical self is our enduring self. It is the self that endures multiple incarnations and endures our entire progression through the evolution, consciousness evolution process. And consciousness evolution is synonymous with enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Enlightenment is, most people think of enlightenment as a destination primarily because of the Buddha's experience, but it is a process. It is not a destination. The purpose of the physical world is relevant to the range of consciousness that we all share. We exist within a range of consciousness, which is one of eight ranges of consciousness, and it is, relatively speaking, very low on that scale, on that range scale. We are essentially at the beginning of our evolutionary process. The purpose of having a physical world environment in order to incarnate into is to create as much of a non-experimenter biased environment for which in which we can learn. What we're learning about and what is preserved after each incarnation are the inherent characteristics of the Creator, which are consists of five. They are awareness, love, wisdom, unity, and stillness. In our range of consciousness, we are tasked with exploring awareness. And that awareness begins with an awakening, which is nothing more within a single incarnation, begins with nothing more than the awareness that all that I have been doing in my life prior to this moment of awakening is not providing me with happiness. I don't like it. It's not giving me what I want and what I need, and there are reasons for that. From that point, it's incumbent upon each individual to explore the self, the inward self. Up until that time, our awareness, for the most part, is pointed outside of us. And so consequently, we are trying to learn about the environment that we're in, and we perceive that we're trying to learn about other people. The reality is we're trying to manipulate other people in the environment in order to give us more of what we like. So we reach that point of awakening. We realize that's not working. It's not giving me more of what I like. And the intention is to invert that same awareness that we were using to learn about the external world and begin to learn about ourselves, invert that awareness inwardly. And we first will be kind of say, become aware, but the task is to actually become awareness in order to graduate from this range of consciousness that we all share. The physical world that we experience is a creation of two lower ranges of consciousness that are considered to be foundational. And the consciousness in those ranges are nondescript. In other words, their learning is not preserved as it is in our range of consciousness. Ideally, well, everyone begins in a condition called primordial darkness, which simply means we don't know anything and we're starting from scratch. We're, relatively speaking, we're in chaos because we don't have any foundations to rely upon. And we incarnate, we have experiences, we, for the most part, will experience what we don't like because we learn by analogy, we learn by comparison and contrast. And so we have to know what we don't like to know what we do like when we encounter it. We incarnate multiple times. The average human on Earth has incarnated over 3,000 times, some as many as 8,000 times. What is preserved after each incarnation is what we have learned about the inherent characteristics, those five inherent characteristics that we just talked about. All of the learning that we gain through all of our certificates and education and all of those accoutrements that are relative only to that incarnation are just, they go into the ground with the body. They have no value other than how they have provided us with learning about those five inherent characteristics. At the beginning of our journey, before we really have accumulated an inventory or a resume of experiences, we have sufficient energy in order to incarnate in two or three incarnations simultaneously. And as we progress through the density, the range of consciousness, we theoretically or ideally will heal, liberate more energy, gain more energy availability, and in other experiences can incarnate in as many as 7, 8 or maybe even 9 simultaneous incarnations, each of which are independent of each other. The variety of incarnations that we experience anticipates providing us with a lens through which we can interpret our experiences. So we will incarnate as male, incarnate as female, and then male, and then male. And it's ideally roughly a 50% incarnational pattern. That's not obligatory. We can incarnate solely as a female. We can incarnate solely as a male. That causes some difficulties in our progression through the density because we are obligated to experience all of the possible incarnations, but if we incarnate solely as a female or solely as a male, then our consciousness pattern, our metaphysical self, is predisposed to prefer the nature of those experiences. And we have a relatively large number of people that have an imbalanced incarnational pattern, and that accounts for the majority of the gay and lesbian incarnations that we have. That is their predisposition because of prior incarnations. They just feel more comfortable in that role. So there's a reason for that. It's not a deviation. It's just a natural process. So we incarnate over and over and over until we learn the curriculum of this range of consciousness. And the curriculum is relatively simple, but it's difficult. And Earth has had the earthly population has had a very sordid and difficult history in progressing.
Yeah. Yeah, I love how you bring up the densities, because that's something I speak to often, and I don't hear a lot of conversation on that. You know, it was interesting because just the other day I was guesting on another person's podcast, and I brought up, I don't even know how it came up, about past life, parallel life. And the host said that even though he had close friends who had experiences with other lives, he still really struggled to believe it. And it's interesting because he struggles to believe in incarnation. I, on the other hand, struggle to not believe in it. To me, it's always just been like, of course, it makes no sense to me why we would only have one life. And I always felt that way even from childhood, even before I had even connected to my other lives. Why do you think it is that some people just can't quite believe it?
Well, very simply, the in order to achieve that vacancy of experimenter bias, then we are, in order to incarnate, we experience what is called the forgetting. And so intentionally, we forget all of our past lives, all of our metaphysical self, all of those things that would give us clues or hints as to what the experience is actually like. We also, in the Earth experience, and this is not pervasive throughout creation and other third density experiences, we enjoy what is called a veil, which is an amplification of our perceptions of separation from our metaphysical self. And that was a twofold purpose. One is it's a protective device for us to shield us from intrusion or contamination by those that don't necessarily wish us well, and also to provide us with more self-protection as well. And so that compounds the difficulty of our experience on Earth. But those are the primary reasons. And also, too, we have significant amount of erroneous information that has been provided to the population that has become institutionalized. And because it's become institutionalized, it is presented to us almost as osmosis. We don't necessarily decide, you know, yes, I'll include this belief in my perception of self. It's just there. And so if we don't reach that point of awareness that I was earlier describing, then we're not aware of it. We just assume that that's the way things are.
Yeah, absolutely. Just out of curiosity, are you referring in that exact comment about the erroneous information, heaven and hell, and that we die, and after we die, we go to one of those places, and that is it?
Well, that certainly, that's part of it. Absolutely it is. And those are religious ideologies, but religion itself, not any one particular, but all religions are predicated on a false perspective. In order to make a religion viable in a low consciousness population, you have to establish the basis of the concept that there is a God, and then there is you, which is separate, which makes the you a subordinate of any God or multiple gods or whatever the religion prescribes. And that in and of itself is false. That's erroneous. And so with that foundation, you can do all sorts of things because, you know, we're sinners or we're what are this or that or the other, that we have to comply to the teachings of the religion in order to overcome our inherent deficiencies, which is the anathema. It's just the opposite of what the intent was. So that is a huge institutional indoctrination that we have to overcome.
Yeah, and it's really programmed. And, you know, that could be a whole other conversation in of itself. But it's interesting as well, because what I experience from that kind of teaching is also this immense amount of pressure, right? Like, I mean, we have a saying, don't we? You've only got one life. And I mean, talk about like pressure, right? Like this is the life you gotta get it all right, whatever all of that is, who knows? Right. But when you really think of it as this is one of many, and this is part of a very large learning process, it feels to me much more enjoyable and playful than this pressure to get it all right within this, quite frankly, a very short timeline of opportunity.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, the pressure is fear. You know, they play on fear.
Yes.
And fear is anything that we don't like. It doesn't feel good, and so I don't like it. And so by having that as a federal, and that is the healing part. You know, people often ask, you know, why do people meditate? Why do I teach meditation? What brings people to meditation? Invariably, what brings people to meditation is the stick. You know, they're being beat over the head with all these ideologies and this fear and so forth, and it doesn't feel good, and they want relief from that. And you get to a point in meditation where you get a bite of the apple. And so when you get that bite of the apple, you transform your motivation. You're no longer running away from the stick. You're pursuing the good taste of the apple.
Yeah.
And so that's transformative in anyone's meditation practice. Yeah. And but it's very effective in an unaware and low consciousness population.
Yes.
And the majority of our worldwide hegemonies are religion-based. And so they function from that perspective of fear.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I have some really fun questions that just came through. One of the questions is, I had this experience with my dog, and she was a dog I'd had. She was 16. I'd had her since she was 3 months old. You know, one of those just really connected, just beautiful, beautiful souls. I just enjoyed every minute with her. And she became very sick. So what I asked her, and she wanted to be put down because we were going to actually be traveling and leaving, and it was going to be really uncomfortable. So we took her to the vet, and I stayed with her, and I helped her leave her body. And, you know, we were driving home, and she just came into my space. I've always been an animal communicator. She came into my space and just bringing in all this love. It was such a joyous moment. And she was telling me how much she loved me, and she wanted me to tell my partner how much she loved him. And she stuck around for a good solid hour or so. I was packing up the house, and she was just kind of like hanging with me. And then out of nowhere, I heard this voice. It sounded masculine, and he said, "She needs to go now." And I remember like actually physically turning my body because it sounded like it was coming from behind me. And as I turned, I got hit with this really strong color of indigo. And my whole frame, my entire vision, both my physical eyes and my inner eye, was just pure indigo. And she went back to what I understand to be her indigo body. And I was filled with this immense amount of bliss and joy. And every time I talk about it, I get so emotional because it was like a gift. I was given the opportunity to experience that. And I'll never forget it, how joyous it was, and that, you know, she showed that to me. Can you explain the indigo body?
Again, this may require some unpacking.
I knew it was going to be that's okay.
Our pets and all animals, all plants and animals fall within the range of consciousness that is below us, that's described as second density. And that density exists as a pool of consciousness. Our range of consciousness is the first range of consciousness where an individual mind-body spirit is created and is preserved throughout the rest of our evolutionary process. But second density functions as a pool. In other words, from that pool, each pool is a different dimension within the density. It's a different level of consciousness. And for example, tigers. Tigers is a range of consciousness. It is a pool of consciousness. From that pool of consciousness, individual tigers are born and they live a lifetime. What they learn, which is much more elementary than what we are tasked with as people, as humans, reverts back to that pool as consciousness within the pool accumulates, just like that, just as butter coming up from cream when you're stirring cream, and that consciousness that floats to the top is scooped off and moved up to the next range of consciousness, and then again incarnating as whatever species is next. I don't have a chart for what the the different pools are. The same is true if the incarnations are lowering consciousness within that range of consciousness, then also goes down. So it flows back and forth. There's a constant flow back and forth. But they are, while they are in, these animals are incarnate, they are an individual personality, just like we are. They develop and they learn as that incarnational body, as that incarnational mind, body, spirit. And for a period of time before they merge back into that pool of consciousness, they, just like humans, they are available to still provide us with communication. The indigo body that you felt and that we all feel at different times, not necessarily triggered because of an affiliation with a lost loved one or pet or whatever, is what we are feeling. It's the condition that we allow ourselves to slip into for that period of time. And it's not, it may be triggered by an event or a person or multiple people, but we are the one that is feeling that. And that is the nature of how we are for that period of time, that we continue to feel that feeling. So it's not necessarily something that the other person or the pet or incarnate or not incarnate is giving us. What they're giving us is permission to be that aspect of us for a period of time. And then that all those restrictions of being in this range of consciousness, including our ego mind, slips back in and we fall out of that. The same is true of when we have felt love in our life. Every time that we have felt love in our life, we perceive that to be something that we're getting from someone or something. But that's actually not the case. We already are love. So that person, the people or the situation that we're in is giving us permission to surrender our false perception of self, our ego, and allowing ourselves to feel our authentic self. And that authentic self is already love. So what we are seeking in this range of consciousness, we already have, but we don't allow ourselves to be that or to feel that.
Yeah. I love how you speak to the pools of consciousness, because I was shown that by my higher self, and I've actually never heard another human speak to that. I was shown it originally with deer. For some reason, I remember like really contemplating deer, and higher self was showing me how, yeah, there's a pool of consciousness that all deer are connected to. Mm-hmm. And when they die, that information is in that pool of consciousness. And that was really intriguing to me. So thank you for expressing that. And
sure.
And also talking about the indigo body. Another thing that I found really interesting in my time as an animal communicator, when I actually did practice as an animal communicator, one of the things that showed up several times, and this was many years back, so I wasn't as connected as I am now, I would connect to the animals. You know, people would have me connect to their past animals, which was always a funny thing, right? Because people think that you're connecting to the dog that they knew in physical form,
right.
You know, mm-hmm. And that's not what's happening. And it's very like difficult for them to understand. But sometimes I had several instances where the animal would tell me that they were in a different area. And it was like not another incarnation. It was like a non-incarnated experience, but they were going there for it often came through as like some level of healing or, you know, processing. And I could never get any more information beyond that.
Okay.
Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, all consciousness goes through healing when we leave the space-time, the physical world experience. The transition is just part of it. And ideally, the reintegration of the incarnational spirit is automatic. It just flows back into the metaphysical self, whether it be a pool in second density or our consciousness pattern, which is what we have beginning in third density. And that's the ideal situation, but that's not always the case, because in order for that to happen, this hierophant, this false identity, this ego, all the same thing, same, just different words for the same thing, is very strong, and we are reluctant to surrender that. And if we were so reluctant to surrender that, it won't integrate into our consciousness pattern, into our metaphysical self, and will become a parallel evolutionary element that will incarnate again, but at some point in the future, it has to eventually reintegrate with the consciousness pattern, but it doesn't have to before multiple incarnations can occur. And so, and again, it's fear of surrendering, because this ego, this hierophant, is our perception of who we are. And that is the major detriment to us advancing within this range of consciousness, is our fear of surrendering that perception of self, because it is who we think we are. And if I'm not who I think I am, then
who am I?
Who am I? Yeah. And that's scary.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I never thought about that we all go through that healing. Maybe it was just for whatever reason I was shown it with those ones individually, because it wasn't every single one of them that told me that's where they were, and some of them did. And I could feel the energy of the space that they were in. It felt very beautiful, but I didn't fully understand it. So that's quite wonderful. You know, I think this conversation for some people, for one, right, as I mentioned, some people just don't believe it. But I think, two, there's this unknown, right? And mm-hmm. just as you alluded to, really what we fear, that unknown can be scary. That unknown can be like, oh, I don't want to experience that, or I don't know if I want to experience that. Like, to me, death is just a transition, but that's not how the majority of humanity sees it. They're very scared of death. It seems like an end. And really, honestly, I feel like our perceptions of death are very distorted. I think it should be a celebration, personally. Of course, oh, mourning, right? Because we do lose that physical representation of that being, and we can mourn that physical presence. But yeah, I celebrate everybody that moves off in my space. But my question to you, well, and I just want to say, you know, as you mentioned, that it's really just the ego is the only one. The ego and the body are what's truly, you know, quote unquote, dying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say to somebody who was scared, you know, who is just scared of death and scared of that unknown?
Well, obviously, that's a huge condition that they have to overcome. For most people, it's just insurmountable, and that's pretty much a representation of where they are in their evolutionary growth, because we begin each new incarnation with wherever we have left off. In other words, the condition of our consciousness pattern. And so everybody doesn't start in the same place. We start wherever we are in this new incarnation. But information, truthful information, is always the most helpful, and allowing them time to digest it, which we're always given time when we have, we fill up the glass to a certain point, and then before it spills over, we stop, then we have time for it to settle. And then once it settles, we'll get more information. But that there's a digestion time in the course of our lives, in the pattern of our lives, that always will appear. And most people think, well, nothing's happening on board. I don't know what to do. So, well, what you're supposed to be doing is digesting all that you've learned up to this point and preparing to move on to a more informational stage. But understanding that the feelings that we have when we have a death, particularly, we create this hierophant, this false identity. We begin creating this from the moment we're born. The first thought that we process as an infant begins to create this identity. And we're constantly modifying this the identity as we move through our lifetime, because the purpose of the identity is to get us more of what we like. We observe people's reactions to our behavior, to how we dress, to who we affiliate with, what we do for a living. All of those things are selected based upon how our identity thinks that will serve to get us more of what we like. Invariably, what we like is love, but we don't know that yet. We're still trying to figure that out. And we want this identity to work. And it's who we think we are, as we were talking about a minute ago. It's who we think we are. I am this identity. We create what are called peer supports. And just like peer supports that hold the foundation of your house up, they hold the foundation and the defines of this identity, this hierophant, up. When we lose a peer support, say, for example, you lose a spouse, which is a significant peer support, what you're experiencing, the grief, what facilitates the grief is, number one, instability of your identity, because this was a significant peer support. But you also perceive that erroneously, but you perceive that to be a source of the love that you need, not understanding that you are the love that you need. And so grief is always comprised of those two elements, that I don't know who I am anymore because my identity has been challenged and I'm not able to get the love that I need. And so I have that perception of void in my life. Behaviorally, a lot of people, and being a mental health counselor, I deal with a lot of this. People immediately want to go out, or very quickly when they get over the grief, and they want to replace that peer support. I need to replace that peer support. And they make poor judgments in selecting another spouse to fill that void way too quickly. without the digestion of what the changes actually have been within them. And so consequently, they perpetuate that situation of an instability in their identity, oftentimes go into anger and will be angry for years, and try to replace those two fear elements of not knowing who I am and not being able to get the love that I need. Ideally, such a loss is intended to motivate us to look inside, become aware that that was a peer support and not really who we are, and that we are the love, ultimately, to find out that we are the love that we were thought that we were getting from that person. And so it is not that complicated, but it is so different from what the general hegemony is in the population of what is happening when we lose that. But when we can understand that and come to grips with that we need to do the work and the changes in us, then we can reach that point of celebrating mm-hmm. our loved one's departure mm-hmm. because they finished their life mm-hmm. experience. And that should be a time of celebration. Yeah, they did it. They made it. And so, it's just completely different from what every culture that I'm familiar with, how they deal with the loss of those peer supports. And pets, too. Pets are a peer support just as much as a person is.
Yeah, absolutely. I've often felt that grief has, the way that people experience grief, not the actual energetic vibration of grief, but the way people experience grief, a lot of it is abandonment. And I like how you mm-hmm. say it's really, truly an identity crisis more than right. like the actual grieving of the individual. So it's really powerful. And, it's not always easy to hear, but to me, these beings come in, whether they're human or an animal. Some of us don't live this, quote unquote, full life. Some of us leave early. And I tell you, it's really hard for me to swallow sometimes when people say, oh, it's so sad. He died too young, too soon. He had so much life to live. And it's like, no, we never die too soon. We die right on time.
Right. Yeah. We're scheduled for that.
There's no too soon. And we're not all meant to live 99 or 80 or 75. Some of us are meant to come in and right away depart. Some of us are meant to come into the womb and leave before we even go through the birthing process, right? Some of us are meant to come in and live a short life. Like, it doesn't, the duration does not have a, equal measurement to the value to that being of whatever they were trying to accomplish in that experience. And it isn't always easy for us to understand why babies die or, miscarriages happen in these things. But I think when we're able to see it from that perspective, that's how I see it anyway. So I guess it's maybe a little bit easier for me. And there was something else. There was something else I wanted to talk about. Nope, I don't know.
No, let me address a point before we move on. What you mm-hmm. were talking about with particularly children that come in for a very short intended lifetime and then depart. Experiences are messages to us about us, of the things that we are supposed to learn and let go of for the most part. And if you think about the effect of a child being born in at an early, very early age, depart, die. And think about the people that they are messengers for, not only the parents and the grandparents and the aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters, but all the doctors and the nurses and everybody that attended them. They're a huge messenger of things that those individuals, and each individual will be a different message for every person that participates in that experience about what they need to become aware of and heal within themselves. And so it is a great service that that child, that spirit provides. And part of the problem is we perceive that is an infant spirit. That is a fully formed spirit. They're not an infant. They're fully formed and they're providing a significant service to those people that are incarnate.
I love that so much, dude. I'm so glad that you brought that in. And I love the messenger. I really feel that. So thank you. And it gave me space to remember what I was also going to say. When my grandfather died, I was told that there's this known thing where, as an elderly couple progress, when one dies, there's this 3-year window. This is known in the medical community, 3 years, where if the spouse makes it past that 3 years, they're probably going to live quite long. But that 3 years, they often don't. And this goes back to that identity crisis, right? Because if these couples, specifically like my grandparents' generation beyond, right, where they have been together for a very long time, right, their de identity is wrapped up in each other, and half, quote unquote, half of that identity leaves, right? And then that really quite immense feeling of who am I? And yeah, where do I source my love is so strong that they go, that they leave as well.
It's a they develop a energy codependency, and when if they don't have the awareness and the elderly people that have not reached that level of awareness that we are tasked with reaching in this range of consciousness. And if you look at elderly people functioning in society as opposed to the younger population or even the same person, if you've known them for a long period of time, if they've not done the work on themselves, then what you're observing with their inability to function efficiently is the coping mechanisms that they use to not have that awareness begin to fail, because obviously their energy is being heavily burdened at that older age. And so if you re observe their behavior, their driving behavior, their functioning in the grocery store, they lose awareness of all the people that are around them, and they just become really hindrances to the efficient functioning of the society. And but that's not always true,
Yeah, I know.
because you have other elderly people that function just fine. They get more efficient as they, reach those elder ages. And the nature of their personality is entirely different from the rest of the elderly population because they have done that awareness work and become aware and let go of those inhibitions to their awareness.
Wow, that's very interesting. And I can totally see it, but I've never thought of it like that. And yes, because I mean, truly, there's so much wisdom that we start to really access in our older years. And, spiritual evolution and our upper chakras are really opening. So it's very interesting to think of that kind of that split of the elderly who haven't awakened to themselves and those who have, and how radically different. I'm watching my parents kind of go that where they're starting to go down that route where, it's they really start to change. They really start to become the old person that
They
I just
do.
don't believe that we have to be. So that's very validating. How interesting. So this has been such a delicious conversation, Dean. How can people reach out to you, find you, locate you, learn more about you?
Well, I've written a number of books. I have a new book that is hitting bookshelves on August 30th, and it is my compendium book. It's called The Enigma of Consciousness, and it explains all of the densities. It explains the beginning of creation. It explains the archetypal mind and why we process thoughts the way that we do, why we create this hierophant. Goes into some depth of Christ consciousness and what Christ consciousness is and forgiveness, and it also talks about healing, how we the process of our enlightenment, the process of our consciousness evolution. and what we need to assume responsibility for within us. I have three other books that are available on Amazon. One is an introductory book for people beginning this process called Enlightenment Plain and Simple. I have another one, The Identity Model, ironically, which deals with suffering and stress and shows us in much more detail than what we discussed what causes stress, what causes suffering, and how we heal from it. An introductory existential question book, which is can be used as a precursor to the Enigma of Consciousness book, is Edifying Children of a Lesser God, and it deals with a lot of the hegemonies that we get by absorption. I have two podcasts, one Simple Enlightenment, that is available on all podcast hosts of any size. And the one that I'm adding to regularly is called Chatting with the Arcturians, which is a series of chats with the Arcturians. And they tell us all sorts of things and tweak my understanding of things. Mm-hmm. And it's a great understanding when, and I'll drop the bomb, they have disclosed it is highly probable that we're going to have contact in the next few years, significant contact, not in the woods by, you know, two guys that are drinking beer.
Nobody else saw. Did it happen or were they drunk?
No, it's not a here, hold my beer and watch this thing at all. But significant contact by various different civilizations that have been long involved in the Earth's progress. So that that's fun, and I think most folks would find that interesting, if not totally abhorrent, if they're not open to it. But they can reach me. I have a website, the initial D, deangraves.org, and it has the books listed there and has contact information and more information on me and services that I try to provide people.
So wonderful. Thank you so much, Dean, for this wonderful conversation. I truly enjoyed asking you questions and learning from you.
Well, thank you, Laurie. Those are great questions. I appreciate your participation.
And to the audience, I hope you enjoyed this very insightful conversation. As always, these guest episodes are every Thursday and the solo episodes are every Tuesday. I'm super grateful for you as the listener in being a part of this podcast. As always, I love you so much.
Thank you for being a part of the Ecstatic Woman podcast. As you experience each new day, we want you to feel that you are capable of tapping into your inner wisdom and living your life ecstatically. If you want to be invited back to the next episode, just subscribe to our podcast. And if you need more information in the meantime, go to alarasage.com.